This is a production of Cornell University.
First, please allow me to acknowledge and thank our donors, Barbara and David Zelaznik, who through their generosity have so enriched our lives here in Goldwin-Smith Hall. Thank you, Sarah Rice and Marianne Marsh, and thanks to my colleagues in creative writing whose hard work and vision have made and continue to make this series and the program here at Cornell such a success. Finally, thank all of you for joining us this afternoon. Today, the Spring 2014 Barbara and David Zelaznik Reading Series presents Alumni Poet Reading with Adele Duzzi. Okay, not really, because this is not the Oscars, but there will be prizes, just you wait. Our readers today are Jose Perez Bedulia, class of 04, Elizabeth Lindsay Rogers, class of 11, and Anne-Marie Rooney, class of 11. I'm going to be as brief as I can and tell you just the tiniest bit, little bit about each of them, and then get out of the way, because I am sure you'd rather hear them read than hear me talk. These are poets whose work thrums with serious quirk and vibrant wisdom. Jose Bedulia is the author of Throng, published in 2012 by And Now Books. He has received the Madeline P. Plonsker Emerging Writers Residency Prize and fellowships from the Santa Fe Art Institute, the New York Foundation of the Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. A transplant from the Philippines, Bedulia lives in Ithaca, where it is entirely too cold, and is at work on a new collection of poems. This is the part, Jose writes, in The Reunification of the Body. When you put everything away, where no one can tell the difference between the wind and a human being. When you speak again, he advises, use your wilderness, not your factory voice. Elizabeth Rogers is the author of Chord Box, finalist for the Miller Williams Poetry Prize. Her poems appear in the Missouri Review, Field, Prairie Schooner, Agni Online, Crazy Horse, Crab Orchard Review, and many other journals. And her nonfiction recently appeared on The Rumpus. A former Oberlin Shanxi Fellow to China, Rogers is currently a fellow at the Kenyon Review, where she edits, writes, and teaches. In her poem, The Frontier, she warns, "We come in peace," curiosity says. But that's how all our ships began. And in A Map of Shanxi, she describes what feels essentially like any writer's quest. A forgotten word tastes like the barrel's bottom, frantic to remember. All I know is to head towards the market in hopes someone might have it in their cracking hand. So I can ask, what is this? But here, without the word, I've forgotten also the shape of it. And what else is there to recall now in this place where every color is living the life of another? Anne-Marie Rooney is the author of Spitshine, as well as the chapbooks The Buff and Shell of an Egg and Effort. Her work has been featured in the Best New Poets and Best American Poetry anthologies, and received the Gulf Coast Poetry Prize, the Iowa Review Award, a Barbara Deming Grant, and others. A founding member of Line Assembly, she currently lives in New Orleans, where she works as a teaching artist. In The Talent Competition, she writes, "The talent competition for Miss Oklahoma contest was about to begin, and I couldn't find my chastity belt." She ends that poem. "But all at once, the curtain's horrible whispers hushed and the show began. I loped on stage like a shiny gasoline bandit, cough and aerosol filled the dry air. At a loss, I told a story about sweating doves. When I looked up, the camera tears were streaming. They had overlooked my indiscretion. I was overwhelmed by joy. And there it was in the third row. I lit a match and dove brilliant into the astronauts. And on that note, let's start today's show with an award. Some of you may be aware that graduates of our MFA program are eligible to teach here at Cornell as lecturers in English for the 2 years following their graduation. The first of these years is paid for in part with an endowment by the generosity of Philip Freund, class of 1929, whose will provided our program with an endowment intended to benefit creative writing graduate students. Since 2011, the Philip Freund Creative Writing Fund has enabled us to offer 2 years of lectureships for all MFA students. Philip Freund's generosity did not end there, however. The Freund Endowment has also made a new benefit available to our graduates. Today, I am pleased to announce the Philip Freund Prize for Creative Writing, an award which will honor these graduates upon their first major publication after graduation with an honorarium of $5,000. Our readers today, Jose, Elizabeth, and Anne Marie, are the first recipients of the Freund Prize for Creative Writing. Welcome back. And if friends are wondering who's buying later, I think it may be you. Please join me in giving them a hand.
Oh my God. My knees are like more jelly-y than they would have been anyway. Thank you, Lyra. It's so strange and lovely to be here. And thank you guys all so much for braving the cold, which is even colder to me as a new New Orleanian. I'm gonna read just a couple of things from my book and then a bunch of new things, because I think it's exciting when one is excited or more excited to read the new stuff. But I'll start with the first poem in Spitshine, which is called Domestic, which is one of a series of invented forms in the book called Domestics. There is a house to me. When Saturday leaves a gradient of onion on the floor, I open a mouth, which is also a corner. Who can say this also isn't mine? The sparrow of belong to has smaller than nowhere to fit. If I could feed the trellis and daisies, I would not. I would not feed the trellis or that which has never sweat against a screen door or door, which can't be mine either. Each plank fretted up as if mistakenly gardened. I would never water the ankles of anything. I think we should begin at the head, the think prickle. If I could be paid and water earned back, I would crater the kitchen and stop the smokestack. My year with flowers unshrinking. Nor were they much for winking. In that way, we were similar, the meat and I, our faces full of twitches, rhyme hinged on awkward hitches. Our expenses were expansive, like, excuse me, we'd better have it. Gold wallops, white eggs, even the sterling shone over basket. Got water? It showed, that slouch. Little tick marks smeared the day with bin-blown kisses. Sure, we were angry and lonely, overmouthed. Our stains showed only in movies, filmy stings set to melt. Believe we fasted slow. When real hit its stride, its pace was to track as a body to pelt, fast marks hitting back as a belt splayed vein. Outstanding image. Pollen-basted body, body in the know. So the new stuff that I'm working on, I'm trying to write more about girlhood and write to different selves that I have been and that I think many of us have been and maybe still are. But the subject doesn't close because I'm starting to write to maybe like, well, this is kind of unclear. But I'm starting to write to myself as an 11-year-old, and I still have so much to say. So it's hard to know when to finish. This is called Little Girl Walk Down. That street and the side of you glinting in light, which neither shows nor ever will show you your muscle, your own diamond face. It practices a monument open in you, steep, chamber of rock that's becoming. Already the young sky undresses your body, now clay, that more bendable fray in the ether. Little, but without throat, walk down the tender of this slab street or glow you can't own, not now in the crumbled scene. It is not your fault. It's not your frame twitching open. It will close the day soon, and the dread roughly mounts. Climb littly upon it. Though it is low, get up there, crow. Girl, shoes coming off the street in clouds, invisible songs where you've been, legs where you've been, and strong ankles don't break. Code you taps out your blessing on the world, but stomp it too. Flame the dress into further gold, still sharper. There's no way to approach a tree, don't approach it. Girl's string flipping out of you, you are turned back to blight if you are quiet. Dust is the threat of being an outside girl, and it smooths. Your face can shine the street you'll shine, but also keep its water hard. Girl, climb the street as muscle thickens. It is more than ribbon to your light work. So I want to read a poem that I've never read to anyone before for you guys. So thank you for letting me experiment on you. And it might go, but we'll see. It's called Overture. Overture. The spirited chip and whirl, the centenary, the girls barking in rooms, no one on a corner who sings, and air drying, and entered. I have not been unhated. When I read the words, I sunk listing higher. Mountains that moved the building, soundwork flinched into its sentence again. What's gained, the embodied, a sparkle on Raleigh wedding, snow which has climbed, been climbed, the intranasal spackle of playoffs, pet peeves, bubble twins and stirring woods, a witch, his writhing clammed the big one, witch. The socks long striped and knowing. Girls barked till I knew I didn't know them. Not hated and pleased. A little seldom silvered on the borrowed down then lifted. Hurried to sense. Sensate. I was separate from the anchor there. Was cinched to the waist. I'm just going to read two more new things, and they're part of a series which the individual poems have titles, but I'm going to try to call them the same thing today. the unstruck sound. Swallow of the filter, which falls upon you like a burning rafter. This happened. Seminary books destroyed. No one thanked you for your sweet mystery, which swelled within them as pollen within a pipe. Soon, all the taps sung golden with that flower. It's not that romantic. Swallow it before more doves can drown in your line, or the stolen silk shed onto the floor in slow puddles. At night, naked, the only water isn't wet. Not really. Press that blowy photograph against your heart, neck, chest. It can light a drying fire too, the burnish in the less, then lost, then one last lens dressed gamely in a red to stitch a nun to sleep. There is no picture for this. Call the Stoic what he is, expanding starch, souring its own gluey waters. You were that water once, that yes, steeping downwards to blue. He drew a little Sherpa on your back. All signs pointed to the slack finger with which he traced your true. Blank finger opening, this was you. Unstruck sound. You sit in the stoop of feel, and your good muscle starts to hurt, to lunge too quickly forward. Through fear, you can plump an art, deplete its endless mush, so red sticks to blue like a righteous map and willing. Replenished, the day plunges its sticker in. If you are slick with it, it is sticky too, dark tack lettering your fingers in rain. You long for her and do not long for her, and a man comes and shows you how to chain the spokes, and in your black and broken dress, you do. You singe all smell and pill. You are popped citrus and lift every voice. Around the circle of you, your soapy body sets its bone. In this shift taking shape, there grows a distance, which is not the same as having meaning and a real book. Water drops from somewhere, so a part of you spins, folds back into caves. This part is the true part, and still you can die from it. Don't belong here, ever. And I'll close with a poem for Lillian Yvonne Bertram, who's a wonderful poet and a member of Line Assembly with me. It's called Story with Red Heels in Its Mouth. She was a princess, and I was a princess. This is to say, we were both princesses. She was the princess of silver before we knew it, and also of rubbing. I was the princess of chain link and butter, and after each recess, my girl hands still kissed with the feeling of clouds where they'd rubbed against granite, because yes, even then, I wanted to save her. Because she was east of where I was, I had to travel east to get to her. Each afternoon, I wound my mouth from the mouth of the Golden River. I began to travel, and I could feel my teeth turn in. I tuned my path only to the scent of her perspiration. The sky was sweating also, for it could feel me moving my longing under it. It was not her exactly that I longed for. It was a vacuum rougher than air. The whole kingdom crept with a static, knowing I was coming. But the birds were still birds. Our fathers were clouds of the hardest cloud, and I passed under and away from them. It went on like this. The path was long, and if you asked, I would say I did not remember how hard it thrummed against me, how it felt me moving and did not open like a sea opens, how in fact it closed very hard around my hand and did not open again until it felt my pulse still live and heavy, and how then the trees fell silent and the fences fell silent and were golden and silent, and I did not listen to their silence but kept moving my feet. Now as a silhouette. Now as a cold ballerina dancing forever. It is after that. She and I are turning and turning. I rub once more against paper and leave it tucked behind her throne. And we kick off our red heels. Our red heels go flying into the white wall and the black wall and the next wall and the next. Thank you, guys. And thank you so much, Cornell. And thank you to Beth Rogers.
Thank you so much for having me. I've been dreaming of this day for a long time. I'm going to read just a few poems from the book. It came out last year. And then some new work. This first poem is from the first section of the book. The first section is a long coming-of-age sequence, and it revolves around studying music. I studied classical guitar when I was a teenager. So this is just a short poem from that section. It's called Duet in E Minor 2002. Cold weather, we agreed, was bad for the instrument. All winter long, you'd driven me to my car, as if dark Capricorn evenings, almost sinister, could split a soundboard in a single seismic instant. The truth is, January's mild in our town. Often I wore that scarf just because you'd smooth it with the back of your hand, then drift up to my girl-glossed lips. Sweetness, you look so good in brown. Come March, there were fewer excuses. Every day I drove with my windows down, the air blowing both ways, like the high E and the low, struck at the same moment. Their ringing enveloped me. I called you and asked, is it possible for you to love two at once? And your yes was like your arm when it conducted the ensemble, a clear source of authority. I knew Anna, the woman you'd loved for 11 years. She was my dance teacher. On Fridays after my music lesson, I'd wear her helmet, two sizes too large, riding on the back of your Honda. That spring, I learned wind from all sides. The last section of the book mostly revolves around the years that I lived in China. This is a poem about an island in the south of China that was colonized, and the missionaries who came brought pianos, and when they left the island, they left all the pianos there. So this island is known as the Island of the Pianos, or in Chinese, Gulongyu. To learn the god of an island, I listen first for his hammers. Here, the thimble drop of bougainvillea and mollusk clicking in silver bowls. Boats, a row of Dutch shoes clap, hull against hull. Along the reef, what is heard as timpani, gulongyu, drum, wave, islet. Once, islet, Sunday's lace and swish, when white ladies landed, arms buried under hymn books. They came with pianos to dolly up the island hills and to form corrals from orphans, mining belief like ore. Faith quick to cull in a sturdy room of sound. Everyone can love 4/4, the easy symmetry in hymns. My shadow grows a train as I wander, wrap around porches, and snake through alleys where Tuscan villas mold and yellow. Moon-shaped gates are the old rings to someone's garden. And over trees, Kong Xingga stands on a peak in granite armor. Meow, meow, a peacock shrieks, splays his tutu of evil eyes. Is this some sign for death? Foreigner, I can't read his note in full. Does he know about the first boy, trained with mutes and levers, then sent by foot to tune against the island's brackish air? Once, some learned arpeggios, others fog and opium. A few climbed cliffs and leapt, gave up their bodies for water. If there is a key for this blue island, it might be B major, both gilt and dark somehow. What drifts now from the open window? Someone loves Chopin's third nocturne, even in the height of day. As I leave, I pass a school where children clink the first of their scales, zhu, from their teacher, the only syllable I can register. I think it is the zhu that means concentrate, join together. Or was it the other one, God, master, nuance, all but the fairy siren dampens, meets the deaf in my ear. This poem is called In Mid-Autumn. Mid-Autumn Day is a festival in China where people eat mooncakes. In Chinese, it's yuebing, so you'll hear that in the poem. It's also a poem about making language mistakes when you're trying to learn a new language. In Mid-Autumn, Shanxi Province, 2007. The moon was not the moon. But it was moon, yes, and cake, yue bing. Bing, I cried, ice or sickness, depending. Sweet heart, you are still where you are. The kitchen again, the cricket's vibrato in the sink. The onion turned, blushed by the window. Sick, a hush slides on bathroom tile. Blue and white, ice alone finds its way to bed. Yue, I said, moon or breathing, you. Come, draw the circle, reach north where I stand. Night is the syrup cupped between our hands. I'm going to read some work that's never been read before. So the new work seems to be sort of futuristic in nature. A lot of it takes place on Mars. And Mars is kind of this place where we've colonized and made a lot of the same mistakes that we've made on Earth and that kind of stuff. So this first series is actually a sonic crown, and it's actually about the space between Earth and Mars. It's called Deep Space Crown. Out the oval, we read darkness. Stars glint like lost sequins or scales numbering a knife's black edge. Libra tips its precarious justice just beyond our reach. This outer world wafts a summer, hot metal, diesel, barbecue. But the moon, matte as wax paper, smells more like gunpowder than egg or bread. We flip through white ink novels typed on endless negative space. Our bodies diminished or augmented, never quite to actual scale. This is how a meter grows into a mile. The mile spins itself into a stone, whooshing out and on and on. Whooshing on and on, our bodies are live cultures trapped in this white capsule. We name ourselves after flora, epiphytes drifting in a realm of cold gas. What we sweat or breathe out will eventually circle back to the drinking glass. Any ship is a hermetic world, an arrow tightened, blunt head swallowing the knock. So forget that blue and cloud earth fading in the porthole. whatever roots we have will dissolve. Mostly air and dust, we wheel within a wheel, a body sure gets around. Within the ship's sure body, a star wheel replaces the wall calendar. Time squares we drawn with spidery legs, framed in concentric circles. I hear the ratchet click, the only real noise between the world's terrible blanks. Tucked in my hollow spacesuit, I wanted to be a rivet, my head brassy and fixed, the analog in chaos. But every human body is a disaster, the fallout from old stars. My brain is just a tangle of wire, electricity clusters. My hair is recessive rubble, all redshift and helium. Imagine the sun as a red balloon, helium colliding at its core. There, they say, a human's mongrel of atoms will weigh 28 times more. I would never trust the hand of any god over gravity's colossal pull. How heavy our limbs grow when faced with that stove eye coming closer and closer. Plasma smells like burning sugar. On Earth, you dream of appliances you forgot to turn off, children you abandoned, and, if you're lucky, the power to fly. In space, you dream only of feet touching down on warm sand or wood. Just sand and warm stone, the universe is a Zen garden, or her third cousin once removed. Mechanical arms rake the surface, meditating on grooves and swirls. Occasionally, we hallucinate water inside a gravel's white spill. Like the theater, space can render us stiller than rock. When we do move, it is behind layers, white scrim over cloak over skin. These costumes keep us away from radiation, the hot and cold knobs of other worlds. What I would give now for a beach, the sand white or red or basalt. My feet want a real lip of water, not just a backdrop of blue. Long ago, against a blue water backdrop, we turned and turned and mostly felt nothing. We held ourselves up like trees without wind. Whatever substance our spoon contained would flow straight from silver and into the mouth. But now is not then. Now is not even now. Clock hands craving sleep sloth towards the next white number. To think I once imagined space as the smooth texture of coins or zeros, and never as that deep sap that traps and always keeps. Never as our own atoms, suspended in this colloid. Inside the dark, these stars, we circle and misread. I want to close today with another poem about Mars. So this poem is set on a Mars sometime in the future, and the idea is that the atmosphere has been engineered so that it's almost breathable by humans, but not quite, as you'll see. The poem is called Agnus Dei, big religious title, which means the Lamb of God. Agnus Dei, Mars. Less than a light year ahead, this atmosphere swirls and thickens towards equilibrium. The first conifers pricking the air, dawn, a blue yonder, the robin's egg. This world that would not move, this world that once looked plain and red as sealing wax, covers its face with grass, with a noise like breath blown in a bottle. Despite the warnings, I'll step out, unhindered by tank or mask, become too winded for words or even listening. I'll wander through white blooms of greasewood, collapse at the mountain's foot. Our drifting, they say, is genetic in nature, a destiny hardwired in ourselves or the stars. But on Earth, as the story goes, my kin called out for mercy, sheep down to skin and bone. Their planet had grown too warm without passion, so everyone had to make a choice. We live now without animals, don't know how or what to confess. We only know one prayer. Make this soul a clear high note. Make the dust devils weaken. Make my cells repair. Keep me from ultraviolet arrows. Let the air I hold be sweet. Once, in place of the canary, we sent out a trio of women. A six-long test, red flues open. The younger two crossed and lived, rushed back to tell the good news. And the old one, they call her a miracle. They said she went out singing. Thank you.
Please join us for a reception upstairs. Thank you all so much.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.